Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dumpty, da, da.
This is Ultimate Archery Culture, the podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge that's dressed for where it wants to be. I'm Jacqueline Berto, who is the least judgmental person on the planet.
And I'm Stephen Bowden, who looks like a whistleblower in a true crime show.
You don't know how true that is. And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who need to carry on with your rising trot and check your diagonal, darlings. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week has been a Kerry week on the Archers, with the episodes being written by friend of the podcast, Kerry Davis, who writes Kate in a particularly, absolutely brilliant manner. Coming up, we have calls from
Sue from Telford, who is still worrying about what George might be capable of.
Sarah, a first-time caller in row with thoughts about George's channel.
Laura from Bedfordshire, who is looking for romance.
Jade, who has finally caught up with the archers.
Lillian from Middlesbrough, who has a plot prediction about Hannah and George.
Catherine, who, like me, is delighted by the week but questions the knife.
David from Carmarthenshire, who thinks George might do well.
Marie from Winchester, who is enjoying Miranda, but is also rather keen on Barry Simmons.
And finally, Jonah, calling after quite a long break, with thoughts about the role of the archers in people's lives.
We also have emails from Andrea in Brittany and our regular correspondent, Chris, in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Rob, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey here, Queen or Tart on the Twitters. And it's time for a quick reminder of The Week in Ambridge. I missed last week trying to see the eclipse in Rochester, New York, which was totally overcast. And when it went dark, all the security lights and the Science Museum came on. Well, looks like Spain to 2026, and the planning has already started. There's been a lot of planning in the Archers this week as well, with varying results. George and Will are planning to take over the work in the tree surgery business. I mean, the administrative work, not the actual work. Ed and Emma Tree Surgeons has a very different vibe to Ultimate Arboriculture. They now have a second-hand chainsaw. Who else is worried that it's fallen off the back of a lorry? Ed stopped them getting a night out at Grey Gables from Harrison by saying it was pretty much the last place on earth they wanted to go. Emma was right dischuffed. Susan, oh, it's only Nana Ignora, was planning on testimonial videos from the shop customers to go on the village website, but she is no videographer, and George rejected them all except Brian's. One for having Jim's scrawny bum in the back of shot. Alice went involuntarily to the doctor's surgery with Harry, who is obviously taking his alcoholism very seriously and is likely to have killed his liver. His mother, Eve, says the family have more or less washed their hands of him, so now Alice has taken him on, leading to sleepless nights, lies at the stable and a shoddy inspection by the County Veterinary Service. Lillian told Kate there was something going on. Kate grilled Miranda about her intentions at dinner on Tuesday, and Miranda gave as good as she's got, asking about how many children Kate had on how many continents. There was cheering in the cheap seats. Kate is planning to offer pet therapy sessions to sit alongside the goat yoga. Oh, that reminds me, what the hell is Primrose Day? Eddie and George, hand in gloves, slagged off on the silent in a Johnny Morris-style interview with Bartleby. It was fine while it was just the silent characters, but then they waded in on Susan. Well, technically, the village shop gossip. George worked out well in the tea room, but otherwise was utterly vile again. But there was a most joyous slap down to stop him talking trash to Hannah. Well, that's not going to end well, is it? Well, I can hardly wait for next week. What a special. I'll see you then.
Thank you for that, Suey, and well done for the catch-up over the 2 weeks whilst you've been away and flying back yesterday to send that week in Hanbridge in to us. Brilliant. Good work. So, Stephen, how's the last week been treating you?
Not brilliantly, actually. I was struck down by a very nasty cold on Tuesday.
You sound bunged up, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm still coughing and spluttering, and I've got all kinds of bottles of nasal sprays and things to try and keep me going. So I should be able to edit out any really bad coughs and sneezes, but it hasn't been the most wonderful week from that perspective. How about you?
Spring has arrived. Spring has sprung. So that's been really nice after weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of pouring rain and mud and just general mess everywhere. Of course, that comes with its own problems because the farmers are spraying slurry. It stinks. And so the nice weather starts. You get your washing out for the first time in weeks. Everybody's got all their washing out and then they start spraying slurry. So everybody washes their washing back in again. So that was day one. Day two, it continued a bit. Day three, the flies all come out because the flies have laid eggs in it all. But it's set to continue the good weather, so it's all spring. Spring is full time ahead now.
Jolly good.
I think there's more than enough about us. Let's get on with the important bit, which is you, our lovely colorinoras.
And first up, after the familiar introduction, will be Sue.
Hello, Pusscat.
Hi, Dumpty Dummers. It's Sue here once again from Telford. And yeah, about Hannah, I think she's extremely stubborn. And I don't see her in any way weakening where George is concerned. In fact, I do think George is going to come off worst ultimately, because I think he will have bitten off more than he can chew. And the other problem with him is that a lot of his actions, he doesn't seem to put a lot of thought into. He acts before he thinks and doesn't consider the consequences of what could possibly happen. However, yes, it's not inconceivable that the archers might use an acid attack against Hannah, because it would be something that is, of course, has been rather prevalent in our time. And so it would highlight the problem. That said, I do think that George would be stupid enough to brag about it. And yes, talk to Brad, who would then, I think, either talk to Neil or Jazza. I agree. I think he would, because he's that sort of kid. I don't think he could hang on to such a very difficult secret. One very final point. I'd like to know who does the rendition of the Dumpty Dum theme tune. Is it the actors from The Archers? I would love to know. Take care, everyone. Have a good week.
Thank you for that call, Sue. And I can answer your last question first. We recorded that singing of the Dumpty Dum theme tune at last year's Academic Archers and Dumpty Dum mashup get-together in Birmingham. And we're looking to see if we will get an updated version from the Academic Archers conference at the end of this month. So if the signature tune changes, it will be because we've got a new recording of it from the new conference. Going back to George, yeah, I agree that he doesn't think things through. I think he's very, very focused on what's in it for him. So anything that he's good at is because he's worked out exactly how it's good for him. And anything else, he doesn't think through very well at all. So I think on that basis, Hannah is probably safer than certainly I felt she was last week. I think that the incident at the end of the cricket, when George gave a good shot and Hannah congratulated him, suggests things are a bit calmer. But we've got other discussions about George coming up, so I'll probably say a bit more later on.
Yes, I agree. And also, I agree with Sue about Stephanie's suggestion from last week about an acid attack being a non-hands-on thing that is prevalent in our world, sadly. And also that George could be actually have that idea dropped to him because of all his reaction with social media and our supposed idea that he belongs to incel type of groups and so the aggressive behaviour against women. Yeah, I still think that an acid attack was a good call by Stephanie, if a little dramatic, perhaps, for the archers. Of course, we've got other indications of possible ways of George getting into trouble this week, haven't we? So we'll hear about those from other callers later on.
Okay, next up, we have Sarah.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Sarah here calling from London. I'm a first-time caller in her, though I've been listening to the archers for about a decade. What prompted me to call today was listening to Monday's episode where George is talking about wanting to monetize his channel. I assume he means YouTube channel, though of course they wouldn't say that in the Archers. To monetize a YouTube channel, you need at least 500 subscribers. I think George is really going to struggle to get that with videos of a talking horse dispensing village gossip. It's not going to have the reach that he needs. What I think might happen, and this is off the back of news that young men are less likely to describe themselves as feminist than men over 60. I think George is going to get the views by posting something a little bit misogynistic, perhaps. Maybe he plays a prank on Hannah and films it. It gets the views and clicks. He's buoyed up by that. He does more. It's just a slippery slope, really. He's going to fall into it. He's going to turn to the dark side. And there's going to be more and more of this type of thing because it's getting what he needs to monetize his channel. That's my prediction. Now, the other thing I'm wondering is how many men over 60 in Ambridge would describe themselves as feminists?
Oh, brilliant call. Thanks for that, Sarah. Yeah, first time calling in. Hooray. We love our first time caller inners, as we love all our caller inners. But it's good to know that there's new views and new people coming in now. I didn't know anything. I don't know anything about monetizing life on the internet as far as George is looking to do. So it's quite interesting to have a bit more information about that. And I agree with you that I think, yeah, something will push him towards the dark side because he'll be getting the clicks and the positive feedback from the same sort of people as he is. So that will push him further and further away. But I was very curious. It's had me thinking for quite a few days about how many men in Ambridge over 60 do we think might describe themselves as feminist. My first thought was Oliver, which sounds a bit weird, really, but he is very much someone who looks at his staff and he's very equal, measured with his staff. I mean, he's been a great friend to Tracy. He's a good friend to supporting the Grundys. So I was thinking he was a bit of an all-round good egg. Plus, with his life with Caroline, who Caroline was very much the professional working woman when he met her with owning, did she part own Grey Gables when he met her? I can't remember. So I felt Oliver might be one, but the only other person I could think of over 60 was actually Robert. Maybe I'm looking at it from the wrong point of view. It's taxed me, this question. What do you think, Stephen?
In terms of men over 60 who would call themselves feminist, I think I would put Brian into that list, even though I don't think anybody else would call him a feminist.
No.
But he would certainly say, oh, yes, I'm a feminist, you know.
Yeah, that's a different way of looking at it, yes.
In terms of who else is there? There's David, there's Tony.
No.
Tony,
no.
Pat is the ultimate feminist in the village.
Yeah, and I don't think that's exactly why he wouldn't describe himself as a feminist. She told me to be a feminist.
Oh, yes, exactly. He might not dare not call himself a feminist, yeah. Given Pat standing behind him.
Well, he's certainly not educated his son to be a feminist. I don't think of Tom as being anything. I know he's not over 60, but he's not a feminist. He's not pro-women, I don't feel, Tom.
And then who else is there? Alistair, we haven't thought about.
Oh, yes, Alistair. Is he over 60? Yeah,
yes.
He had his 60th birthday, didn't he, a little while ago?
Yes. Those, I think, are the main over 60s characters that we've got, apart from the Grundys.
Yeah, we can't even talk about them. There's too much of them at the moment.
And probably not Bert Horobin either.
I think you're right there, Stephen. But thank you very much for your call, Sarah. Brilliant. First time caller in, right?
I did want to say on Sarah's call, the point about 500 subscribers, they did have a conversation after Sarah had called in about whether George's videos are too parochial because he's doing village gossip. And if he wants to go viral, which he does, he needs more than village gossip. So I think that's an indication that at some point he will realize that he can't monetize the Bartleby videos and will need to do some more. And I think the idea that he will go down the misogynist route might well come out of that.
Mm.
But he's not going to get much support. He's not going to get the help from Eddie making the videos. He's obviously getting more in terms of feedback from the Bartleby videos. But as Sarah said, it's not the number of viewers, the number of looks. It's the actual number of subscribers that you have, which is going to be key to monetization.
I have to say that Eddie and the gossip thing and the whole Bartleby thing, I love Eddie doing his posh Bartleby voice. That's one thing. That's just a good throwaway thing. But there's nothing I hate more than that kind of gossiping and spreading of happy, we're making fun of things type of that kind of video. And I hate that. I hate that thing about our modern world, the mockery of people. So I'm not sure that Eddie is in my good books.
No, I don't think that people should be happy about it. And even if it's funny, that doesn't make it right.
Absolutely. Oh, aren't we moralistic this morning, Stephen?
I blame it on the cold. Anyway.
I don't know what. I blame it on the flies then.
Next up, we've got a call from Laura.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Laura from Bedfordshire here. Long time no speak. I hope everyone is well. Just a bit of a random thought I've been having today, not related to any specific episode this week, about the kind of love lives and romance in Ambridge. I was just reflecting that we have a huge number of what I could call younger people. So I was thinking like Lily, Freddie, Ben, Josh, Rex, even Kirsty, who we never hear anything about their love lives. I appreciate that some of those characters have had like romantic relationships in the past. And that was Lily and the teacher whose name I cannot remember. And of course, with Ben and stuff. But I don't know. I was just thinking, quite unrealistic, isn't it? They've got such this huge amount of people of a younger age group who none of them seem to have settled down with any sort of romantic partner. It's just made me think about it seems sometimes all the romantic stories in Ambridge are focused on specific families, perhaps more random families. I was thinking sort of the Horobins with Mia and Brad and Tracy and Jazza over the past few years. And, you know, now the sort of the home farm lot, really, if they can still be called the home farm lot. We've obviously got Miranda and Brian, and I know Alice and Harry are no longer in a relationship, but there's still that element of, I think, perhaps even Harry wanting that to be a relationship as much as Alice doesn't. And then there's the element of Chris with Alice as well. We hear a lot about Kate and Jakob. Yeah, it was just something I was reflecting on. Again, I appreciate we don't hear everything that's going on in Ambridge, but there does seem to be a huge gap in the romantic lives of so many people, especially a number of people who may be at that age of at least trying to find a long-term partner, if not a life partner. Life goes in different directions, doesn't it? But anyway, yeah, just a thought. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Laura. And I think you've probably hit on something that's very true. It might be the thing that I go on about quite a lot, which is the 166¾ hours of the week that we don't get to hear what's going on in Ambridge, and the fact that even when we are there, we're only one place at a time. So a lot could be going on without us knowing about it. But yes, I don't think Josh has ever had a girlfriend that we've talked about. I don't think Freddie has ever had a partner of any sort that we've talked about. Ben had Beth Casey and came to a fairly horrible end with his mental breakdown. So we have had some of that. Then Lily, of course, had her long-term relationship with Russ Jones. At the moment, it is all fairly quiet. Now, the problem I think the programme has is that if you want to focus in on a relationship like that, you need to bring another character in. And that means another speaking character. And there's a limited amount of space for more characters, I think, at the moment. So you'd perhaps only hear about it secondhand just to let people know there are relationships going on, rather than bringing somebody in like Beth was brought in for a while to actually have that as a storyline. And otherwise, we're left with the Love's Young Dream that is Brad and Mia as the main focus, and George's utter incompetence in this front and his continual crushes on unsuitable women.
Yeah, I agree. There are many of the younger characters who we don't have. We can see they're not in relationships. We don't know where Lily is now. We know that Lily, Josh and Paul are all sharing stables, and none of them have a regular, a kind of permanent fixture boyfriend or girlfriend, do they?
Well, we don't know, because we've heard so little of Josh in particular.
Yeah.
He could be spending a lot of the time staying with a girlfriend in Borchester or something like that.
That's very true. Chelsea, though. Chelsea obviously was part of the Ben Best storyline with her, the one night stand and the unwanted pregnancy. But we don't hear anything of Chelsea with her and her relationships with other people. We know of her relationships with her family and people around Linda and at Lower Loxley, but nothing of her friendships. Did she go out with someone? Did she go out with Mia's older brother?
Yes, she went on a...
In inverted commas.
Jake thought it was a date.
Jake, that's right.
And Chelsea didn't. So yes, so was that. But I can't believe that Chelsea would have a serious relationship without it being a psychodrama that we would hear all about.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas some of the others, and I was thinking Josh in particular, could well be carrying on any sort of relationship without us knowing anything about it.
Well, you see, I feel the same about Lily. I think if Lily was having a relationship with someone, we would know about it because, of course, there's the whole backstory of Russ and the university, and now she's at university again. And also, Lizzie has to get involved in her kind of Lily's dramas. So we'd know about it from that point of view as well.
But she does spend a lot of time at university, so she could be in a casual relationship with a fellow pupil.
But good thoughts, Rory. Really made us think about, what else is going on rather than the actual storylines. Good call. Thank you.
Next up, we have Jade, who was, if you remember, has been on catch-up for quite a long while.
Hi, Dumpty Dummers and Jacqueline and Stephen. It's Jade. I've caught up. Hey. And calling in after Wednesday's episode, I'm really enjoying this week, particularly Kate and Miranda. Kate's line about corporate clothing had me giggling. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Emma and her ongoing blindness with George. While I agree that there is denial there, I think there's also shame. And I think, like Susan, Emma really cares about what other people think. And so she wants to fit, in inverted commas, George behind closed doors and then run around fixing all his issues so that she can pretend that her son is fine. But actually, in doing that, she's just perpetuating the issue because he never has to take responsibility for his own actions. Now, I'm also worried about Alice because she started lying about helping Harry, and particularly when she said she wasn't even going to tell her sponsor, that really had red flags for me. I think Harry's been brought in as this sort of darker version of Alice's storyline, and while I think Alice's recovery will overwhelmingly still be positive, I think Harry is this dark reflection. When Alice spoke to his mother, all the things Eve listed as Harry having done, Alice had also done. The difference is Eve's and her family are unable to forgive Harry, whereas thankfully Alice's were able to forgive her and support her through. So yeah, I think we're going to get a darker version of Alice's story where recovery doesn't work through Harry. But I do think overall, Alice will still have a positive recovery. It's just this will be a bit of a bump in the road. All right, I'm out of time. Bye, everyone. Talk to you soon.
Thank you if you're called Jade. Yeah, well done for catching up. It does take time. If you just get a week or so behind, that's bad enough trying to catch up. The Alice and Harry storyline, we started the week with it and we ended the week with it. It's kind of like bookends. I think a lot of people are very tired of the story. Looking at our Facebook page, a lot of people are not enjoying this. And I have to say, I fall into that category. But the way Jade assessed the story this week, how it rolled out this week, I think was extremely good because, we are going to see Harry's struggling, and he is struggling. But the problem is that he's making Alice struggle. And that bump, as Jade said, is hard for her. And she's going to have people assuming around her, no matter how strong she is, that she's falling off the wagon, that she's going down the line and she's struggling. And I think the big red flag for me was when she says she hadn't shared the fact that she was helping Harry with her sponsor. It's a dark story. And I suspect that might be where we're going. As Jade said, Harry's showing the darker and darker and darker side of it. Whereas in the end, ultimately, Alice will be a positive story.
We don't, of course, know whether or not Alice has fallen off the wagon. We're assuming that she hasn't. But I think there's some positive hope at the end of the weekend that Both Lillian and Kate were concerned about Alice and I think are likely to stage an intervention, perhaps on the mistaken assumption that she is king again. What will happen is that Alice will probably tell them that no, it's not that, but she will confess to the problems with Harry. And she'll explain that she didn't want to tell anybody because she knew how Chris would react. Now, I'm very sympathetic towards Alice not telling Chris what's going on because Chris would absolutely overreact. We learnt that Chris is still in love with Alice, which wasn't a huge surprise, but it was confirmed. And perhaps we'll get onto the implications of that for Hannah later on. But not telling her sponsor, definitely a wrong move. Though the sponsor will say, no, you can't, you must not do that. But Alice knows she's wrong to be supporting Harry. She is just hasn't got the hard edge enough to tell him where to stick himself. And that's what she really needs to do. But maybe with Lillian and Kate coming in and saying, look what this is doing to you, she will realise, as she did when she left Chris, that the only way she is going to manage to fight this is by being a lot more selfish. And that means telling Harry that while she was willing to give him some moral support, the constant middle-of-the-night phone calls, just not good enough.
No.
She can't be expected to deal with that.
No, but also maybe this is like the first week of doing this, and so she's still perhaps coming to terms with the fact that she wants to help him because she's been in that bad place herself, and she recognises that. So she obviously does want to help him, but in fact, it's building to a head. It's become too much for her. The whole week, we've seen it building up. And as you say, the fact that Lillian and Kate are there now and have the story, yeah, a good thing. Now, Jade also talked about Emma and about Emma wanting to deal with George because Emma and Susan both care about what people think from the outside. And I agree with that as well. George, really interesting how he was in the tea room with Fallon. Very different to how he was with Will. The contrast in George is we're seeing it is flagrant. So interesting.
Yes. And Jade also commented on Kate and how good that was. And I absolutely agree. I think that, as you noted at the start, Kerry writes Kate in such a good way.
Fantastic.
I think he really enjoys writing her. And she is at her best. That I really love Kate as a character. And I really love the Kerry version of Kate above all, because she just comes up with these utterly ridiculous things.
And then the whole week has been choosing to put in our introductions what we said. Almost everything came from Kate. There was so much stuff. It was really, really brilliant. It's joyful. It's joyful. Even though you're irritated with her.
I think of all the people in Ambridge, the one I would most like to spend some time with is probably Kate.
Oh, I don't. I'm going for Kerry Davis because she comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, but he is not a real person.
Yes, I forgot that.
Shall we move on to our next call?
Yeah.
This one is Lillian.
Good morning, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all dumptidumers everywhere. It's Lillian McCarthy here from Middlesbrough. I'm calling on our Thursday morning after Wednesday's episode, and I have a plot prediction, and it's not going to go down well with people in dumptidum land, but I think that I can see a scenario whereby George and Hannah end up getting together. Now, don't be hasty to judge. I just felt that there was some semblance of chemistry there. We know Chris is still holding a torch for Alice, so there's no chance of her getting together with Chris. Tilly Button, well, we don't really know, do we? I just feel that I can see a scenario whereby they might end up together. Now, I'm not saying that will last or be permanent, but I do think it could happen. Interested to see what other people think. Thanks for the podcast and speak soon. I noticed I had about 45 seconds left. I thought I'd just bob on quickly and say hurrah to Miranda for the way she handled Kate. Bye for now.
Thank you for that call, Lillian. And yes, after Wednesday's episode with the cricket practice, it did look as if there was a certain amount of thawing of the tension between George and Hannah. But whether that would go as far as the two of them getting together, I'm really not sure. The first thing that struck me is the age difference. Now, we don't actually know exactly how old Hannah is, but she first arrived in the village in 2008 as a student at Bridge Farm. So let's assume she was 18 then. And so she is now 34. The standard idea for suitable age differences in relationships is you take the older person, divide their age in half and add 7, and that's the youngest that they should be in a relationship with. So if you take 34, divide it in half, you get 17, add 7, that's 24. And George has just turned 19, so he's about 5 years too young for Hannah really to sensibly be interested in him. And I do think that a very grounded, sensible, experienced, mature woman in her early 30s is not going to really find George that attractive. And remember that when George was doing the videos with Chris, everybody described Chris as a thirst trap. So he is obviously considerably better looking than George. So my feeling is that won't happen. Now, I know the other two reasons I think that get in the way of that, and I'm sorry to be totally disagreeing with you, Lillian. Firstly, George still carries a torch for Fallon, as we saw the very next day when he did his stint in the tea shop. And yes, Chris is clearly and explicitly still in love with Alice, but he's going to find out at some point fairly soon that that's never going to happen. And I think at that point, he's going to realize that there was somebody just as good for him there right along, and that he will realize that Hannah is a much better bet than constantly feebly longing for his ex-wife.
It's interesting. Yeah, and I don't agree with Lillian either. I think it's a complete flight of fantasy, Lillian, but a good one because we're allowed them. It's the Archers. George, I still see him in my mind as a kind of a teenager growing out of his teens. He's still a bit spotty around the edges, a bit unkempt at times. He's still, and he's brash with it. He's a Grundy, so he's got that kind of brashness with a bit of Will stupidity thrown in. So no, I don't see it. Hannah's too, she's too grounded for him. I'd be quite interested, but I completely and utterly 100% agree with you over the hooray for Miranda.
Let's move on to another call. This one is from Catherine.
Hi there, it's Catherine. I'm halfway, well, not even halfway, climbing up a muddy hill in Shropshire, a lovely break just outside Ludlow. Anyway, I'm ringing up because I think it's been such a fantastic last few days in Ambridge with Miranda and her very sharp retort towards Kate was brilliant. Brian just saying yes, no, and everything just occasionally, totally outclassed by the two women. But the most interesting thing for me is the knife. Now imagine you're working in a pub and someone comes and says, have you found a knife? And she just says, no, I'll look in the lost property. You're not allowed to walk around with knives, whether they're in your pocket, whether you have a professional reason to have them. Sentencing guidelines quite strict on bladed items, I think they're preferred to. Anyway, and then Lillian says, no, it would be in the lost property. I don't know where the key is. Now, that statement isn't for no reason. Who's got the key? Has Emma got the key? Maybe that's something to do with her. But more importantly, what the hell are they talking about knives for? When is it going to be used? Is Marky going to return? Is there going to be a bit of a row over the cricket tea? Why is a knife suddenly, is it Chekhov's pistol? It's put there for a reason, isn't it? Why is a knife suddenly being mentioned? So that's my thoughts. I'd be very interested to know what everyone says. And really agreed with the caller, was it Claire last week, who said that we've had enough for men being evil to women. Something interesting is going to happen. Have a great week.
Thank you, Catherine. I hope you made it up to the top of that hill. Yeah, the knife. It's a kind of, it could be the next bit of the storyline. We're all assigning it to George and some incident. But it could also turn out to be a red herring because they do this, like the killer steps on the outside of the shop. We were convinced somebody was going to fall down them when Tom and Natasha were living there and then Hazel was there. And oh no, and nothing ever happened with the killer steps. Although there's still time because Chris lives there, doesn't he, with Martha at the moment.
Yes.
But the knife, yeah, it seemed a bit pointed. It seems like a weird thing. But I think the law, Catherine seems to know that you're not allowed to carry around knives. And a bit like the acid attack, knife attacks are in the news a lot. So maybe, yes, we are going down the line of a knife attack. But I would have thought a farrier would have a penknife on him anyway. But would he, even he, not be allowed to carry a knife around? Is no one allowed to carry a knife? Is there a limit to sizes and things?
There are a couple of exceptions to the rules about knives. One is that you are allowed to carry a folding knife that has a blade less than 3 inches long and that is not a locking spring-loaded type. So it's one you actually need to manually fold.
Right.
So a Swiss Army knife would be fine because that would fall within that category. The other thing is you can carry knives around for religious reasons. So if you're a Sikh, there's that Kirpan, I think is the name of the blade that Sikhs traditionally carry. So you're permitted to carry that. And if you use it for work, so a chef can carry a whole bag full of kitchen knives. And so a farrier, I think, would be able to carry a knife that was more than a 3-inch folding knife if it was something that he used for his trade. So I think that Chris is possibly not acting outside the law, but I do agree that it's not often that you'll mention something like that without there being something behind it. Now, whether that means it's going to end up being used in a knife attack and a stabbing or something like that, I don't know. It could be just a MacGuffin that is used to drive us plot forward, and the fact that it's a knife rather than anything else isn't so relevant. So they might have decided on a knife just to get us worrying that it might be used in a knife attack. So you've got that additional thing. If it had been some sort of specialist piece of farrier equipment, it would have been less something that we would speculate about. So I think that it's probably going to result in something. I don't think it's going to be a knife attack. I don't think it's going to be something huge. But I do think that it'll probably be dragged on for a few more days. And then we'll find out what was going on there.
Yes, and thank you, Catherine, also for mentioning, it was actually Becky, I think, last week, who talked about the evil men in Ambridge and men being evil to women, and that Catherine agreed with them. I knew Catherine would agree with her. She's made her feelings very clear about that in the past, so that's very good. Those are the first few calls. Now, we're going to give you a bit of information on how you can call into us or drop us a line by message, and Stephen's here to tell you how.
The first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. The next option is to send us a voice note or a written message via WhatsApp on 07810 012 881, and that's a +44 and remove the first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your calls to a maximum of 2 minutes. Or finally, we have an email address you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. Maximum of 250 words, please. And that email address is dumptydum@mail.com. Do bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to contribute, and all those details will be in the show notes.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now we'll go back to our calls. And next up is David.
Not with Jacqueline, Stephen and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Visi Maeto, it's David from Carmarthenshire, calling in after Thursday night's episode. How grim it was to hear Will and George talking about Ed and Emma and referring to them as good workers. Will has obviously ascended to the managerial class, although I'm not sure how. I don't even know what Will's living on at the moment. And as for George, having said that, I do believe that George is going to go on to succeed and be a successful business person. Lots of what he's saying about owning the story of your business and being authentic is obviously very true. And I think it's the key to the success of many small businesses, especially in the rural economy. So I think good things are coming for George. I just hope that he learns his lesson along the way and becomes a more rounded, normal person. Although I'm not holding my breath on that one. Secondly, I thought it was really odd the way that Fallon was cozying up to George about being barred from the Bull. I think it's amazingly disloyal to her mum for her to have that conversation with George. I think that Jolene was completely right in barring George, and I would keep him barred. I am a licensee myself, as we have a distillery on the farm. And of course, the one thing you must protect at all costs is your license. Without your license, you don't have a business. So Jolene was absolutely right. And for Fallon to go behind her back and almost apologize to George, I thought was really odd. I wouldn't give two hoots if George never went in the pub ever again. He's just one person. He probably buys a pint and scrounges off everybody else anyway. So it's no loss in my book, anyway. One other observation of the week. I think I heard Harrison call Hannah love at one point. And I really don't think Hannah would wear that. But it went by without incident. Anyway, another good week. Hope you're all well. Hoi la matro. Bye.
Thank you for that call, David. Yes, I'm absolutely with you that Jolene was wrong to apologise to George and to lift his barring from the pub. But I don't think you're quite right in terms of Fallon's position, because Fallon was, I think, actually being supportive of Jolene. Jolene had already taken the wrong, as you and I both think of it, decision to make that apology to George and to let him back into the pub. So Fallon was actually encouraging George to do his side of the thing, to meet Jolene halfway and to re-establish relations with her. So I think that Fallon was actually being supportive of Jolene rather than undercutting her, because Jolene had already effectively undercut herself.
Yeah, interesting one. This week's been very interesting because I didn't quite understand why she was even quite so cozying up to George. She knows that George has got a crush on her. I felt that it was a really weird position, although she did stand up to him, didn't she, when he said, I am willing when mum was at work. Now, I'm a bit worried about this job situation at the tea room, because Emma and Fallon had a conversation at the beginning of the week about the staffing when Emma's on her course and Emma has to come back to do a GCSE or has an exam. But Fallon has to replace her for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that.
I think Fallon has to find cover for her. But actually, Fallon can say it's not my problem. It's Tasha's problem
now. That's
what
I don't understand. That's what I don't understand. Why is it falling on Fallon's head?
Because it's Natasha, and Natasha obviously is not going to manage that sort of thing. And she's even let Fallon down by volunteering and then losing her bottle or whatever it was that stopped her from doing it.
Losing her bottle. Yes. She couldn't clip-clop around the tea room in her stilettos. No, she had to clip-clop to the bottling plant. Yeah, I agree with David. I thought it was out of order of Fallon to try and persuade George to go back to the pub and whatever. Nah, she shouldn't have been. Maybe she was trying to support Jolene, but nah, don't know, didn't like it. But David talks about George and he thinks he will succeed because he's got all the path, the small business path down and everything else. But I think George's personality and his ruthlessness and selfish ness will get in the way of that. He will talk the talk, but can't walk the walk in the end.
If he does succeed, it'll only be by having climbed all over the backs of other people trying to help him and leaving them in the dirt. And he will only succeed by leaving a trail of destruction behind him.
Yeah, the cost to George succeeding is quite high. I agree with David. The Will and George talk at the beginning of the week, I want to know how Ed and Em see the agreement with Will and how Will and now George see it is quite a different matter. I think there's two whole things going on there, two different sets of thinking, and I think that is going to come to a head.
Yes, and we don't know how much proper documentation there was. I think they did sign something. I think in the end, if what they have is simply a loan, then I think that it will turn out that Ed and Emma are in the stronger position of the two.
Yeah, I agreed. But Will is seeing it as something different, encouraged by George, frankly. So it's going to be a very interesting development, this. And because we know the interesting relationship that Em and Ed and Will have, they don't do things calmly. They don't do things nicely. It becomes very vicious very quickly.
Emma has been very visibly doing a lot of peacekeeping and going along with everything that Will says. And I think that she probably knows that there's some issues there. But if she's got any sense, she'll think if we can keep things sweet until we're up and running, once we've got a properly established business, we will then be in a position perhaps to replace any contribution from Will with a bank loan or something like that. So things at some future date all go horribly wrong. It may create yet another rift between Will and Ed, but it might not destroy the business the way that any disagreements and arguments would now. I think Emma is being very sensible, and I think Ed occasionally is wondering why she's being quite so nice to Will. She's right to do so.
Yeah, there was an ironic moment, though, wasn't there, when they said we've spent £391 plus change on this second-hand chainsaw,
14-inch top-handled chainsaw.
I knew you'd have taken all that in. That's technical. Didn't even cross my mind to make note of that. But we didn't even touch your loan because they had £100 towards it from Eddie and Clary. My God, it's not even all their own money. I'm working their own work. I'm finding the whole Ed and Emma setting up. I want them to succeed. I desperately want them to succeed. But my God, their innocence.
They are. Let's hear now from Marie.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen and all Dumdy Dummers. It's Marie from Winchester here. Just thought I'd call in with a few of my thoughts. I'm not going to rant about George this week. And I think everybody's been doing that and still is. But I do believe that Hannah needs to just grow a pair and tell him to naff off and actually tell Harrison and Chris, I'm not putting up with this. I don't know why she's putting up with it. But anyway, also, I think Miranda and her cutting comments are absolutely hilarious. I really like listening to the character. She's awful, but she's so entertaining. And I love the thing with Lillian when she's sort of, yeah, I hate her. Oh, no, here she comes. And doll. It's absolutely wonderful. And it's just absolutely hilarious. I love it. I love it. I love it. And what about the last thing I'm going to talk about is this man who's after my own heart is Barry. Barry who orders extra clotted cream. Well, that's me all over. I've done that on many occasions. And total gluttony. Please forgive me. But clotted cream, well, I agree. If you can order more, order more. Anyway, looking forward to seeing some of you in a couple of weeks. Can't believe it's a couple of weeks now. And my lovely ferret Archie, it's almost ready. And I've actually had some Harris Tweed delivered. Well, a tiny little sample to make a little flat. Wait to show him off. Anyway, lots of love. Take care. Have a lovely weekend. Bye.
I love that, Marie. Your enthusiasm is just fabulous. Yeah, I agree with everything you said about Miranda and Lillian.
Yeah.
Big hooray for gluttony. Sorry. Maybe that was me maybe 10 years ago, but I'm rather older now and probably wiser and also had a husband who had a heart attack 3 years ago. Probably gluttony is off the thing. It hasn't made me any thinner, I have to say that. And Archie the ferret. Can't wait to meet him. I'm glad that somebody else is thinking ferrets like me.
Yes, I came across something. Is there a category for best ferret made from found objects?
No, recycled objects.
Recycled objects. It's just I was in the vet picking up some drugs for Tangle, and there was a note on a pad just over the counter that I saw which said, ferret poo in fridge. Need to check who to pick it up.
That would be very interesting. All you need is a feather and stick it on the ferret poo, and then you have a recycled object.
I have a photograph of the note, but not of the actual ferret poo itself.
Oh, we definitely need to get that ferret note on the Instagram page.
I say that Marie thinks she might like Barry, but of course Barry is not a ferret person. He's a rat person. He's the one with a pet rat.
Yeah, he is, that he takes around with him. So yeah, that puts me off Barry, let alone the gluttony.
And I think he's also the one with the comb over hairdo or there was some storyline about his hair.
Barry's not being addressed as a very attractive character in the environs of Ambridge, I have to put it like that.
Yes, he didn't even manage to beat either of the Snells for chairman of the cricket club
committee. Of course, that was the other story. I knew he was in another story recently. But Marie, I hope you're going to be joining us when we're in London. I know you are joining us when we're in London for one evening. When we go for a meal, so I shall have to keep my eye on you for your gluttony.
Let's have our final call now. And this one is from somebody who called a long time ago, but we haven't heard from recently, Jonah.
Hello, this is Jonah Titchmarsh, also known as Jonah Man Jazz. This is my first call in for, maybe a couple of years even. Don't have any particular points relevant to this week, but just a couple of thoughts. just over a year ago, my mother died. She and her mother listened from the very first episode of The Archers in the early 50s or whenever it was it started. And she listened throughout her life with very few breaks. And I can remember saying to one of the Archers listening friends at the time, and this is one of the things that really brought it home to me, saying she'll never know what happens in The Archers now. Obviously, she'll never know a lot of things, but like that one particular thing seemed very poignant for some reason. And yeah, and another thing that springs to mind is about the recasting of Robert. I always found one of the wonderful things about The Archers, I know they do recast people sometimes, but usually if an actor died, then the character would die. And it would be a really good, they do a tribute to the character and a tribute to the actor, sort of within the program. Obviously not specifically, but like you would get that impression. And I feel that with recasting Robert, they've lost that, which is a bit of a shame.
Thank you for that call, Jonah. And yes, The Archers does have this amazing way of getting into your life, and the way that the storylines are planned so far in advance, it's a very legitimate thought to have that if you die now, you won't know what will happen in stories where the outlines have probably already been sketched out. It's all what makes the programme so wonderful. On the recasting, I know exactly what you mean. Where possible, characters have been allowed to move on. And we've had that particularly with June Spencer retiring. She hasn't died, but she has retired. We had it very much, I think, with Phil when Norman Painting died, and they managed a very fitting ending for that. And there was never any question that they could recast Phil Archer. I was slightly surprised when they recast Robert because he was quite old. He's almost 80. And so I think there was scope to allow him to become silent and then to die a bit later on. And yes, it does mean that they couldn't really pay a tribute to him. And I think that that's a pity. It doesn't happen all the time. I don't think Colin Skip had a particular farewell when he died because he was recast as Tony. And so when they can do it, they can do it. And when they can't, they won't. I'm sure that for the really long-standing ones, and Paddy Green is now the longest-running person ever in a continuing drama like this. And so they certainly won't recast her. And I hope that they give her a full tribute in a storyline to mark her passing, pays tribute to both Paddy and Jill Archer. But yeah, I guess they have to strike the right balance, and we'll see that with Ian Pepperell when they make a decision about Roy too.
Yeah, but who's a particularly young person that died?
Yeah, the replacing of people, it's always a bit of a divisive issue. Even when Clary's been replaced, people have not liked her voice, and now we've all got used to it. I can't particularly remember old Clary's voice, and I remember being slightly disturbed when the actor changed. It's very interesting because I lost my mum last year, and one of our connections, apart from the fact she's my mother, one of the things that we regularly talked about in the last few years was The Archers. And she became a bit un-archery. She liked it less and less, but I think she just liked to moan about it because it was a different point of view to my point of view. It is one of those things, those stories that go on and on and on. We always say that this one will run, this one will wait and see, yeah. And that ends for some people, and that's real life. But yeah, very thoughtful call. Thank you for that, Jonah. So, those are all our calls. Thank you very much. And do call in next week. Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week, Stephen?
Yes, we had two. The first one is from Andrea in Brittany near you. And it has the subject line, Dumpty Dums Old and New, and it goes like this. Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and lovely Dumpty Dummers all over the world. It's Andrea from beautiful Brittany. After listening to this week's Dumpty Dum on Monday morning, Dumpty Dum being the second thing I listened to on Monday morning, the first being The Archers, I noticed unplayed podcasts from October 2022, which is before I started listening. One episode caught my eye, an interview with Graham Harvey, the previous agricultural story editor. Not just for the mention of the great, much-missed silent character, Jennifer's Kitchen, but also Graham's thoughts on the Grundys. Graham said that following the then-recent storyline about George's problems with reading and writing at college, he had high hopes for George. And I exclaimed loudly, didn't we all? As much as I love the dramatic possibilities of George's character now, I started to get a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach whenever he appeared the other week. I guess this is a tribute to the writing and the amazing acting but I'd feel better if, in this case, they were more mediocre. For relative newcomers like myself, I'd recommend going back to listen. Finally, many thanks to Stephen, Jacqueline, and all the rounder-uppers for continuing to brighten up my Monday mornings. Andrea.
Oh, thank you, Andrea, for all that. Yeah, it's very interesting. I'd forgotten until you reminded us there of George's problems with reading and writing when he was at school. But then he went on, didn't he, and did this, the course that he's been doing. And is that sponsored by, has he got money to do that? How come he's gone from having difficulties at school to doing a further course, an adult education, don't know, further education, higher education?
Yes, I'm not sure. It may be something that's locally authority funded.
Yeah, could well be. But yeah, George, yes, his story is developing. And I think like you, I'm a bit apprehensive, let's put it like that. But also, I also agree with you, Andrea. He is absolutely brilliantly written and acted. Excellent. It's excellent. And he really gets under our skin. And that's what we want from our archers.
I think he's going to be a very different sort of Grundy from Joe and Eddie, who are very much in the same sort of mould of incompetent farmers. And they were brought in some ways to replace the Walter Gabriel bad farming thing with a slightly more complex, nuanced approach. But they've always been in that sort of constantly on the edge of failure situation, which is something that, of course, Emma has been talking about in regards to Em and Ed tree surgeons. So I think George is going to be very different from that and is going to perhaps be successful in a way that Emma and Ed won't be.
Now, the second email had the subject line, Curious George, and was from our regular correspondent, Chris. And it goes like this. Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and everyone in Dumpty Dumland. Harry Chilcott kept Alice up all night, but not in the way we were thinking he would. And she had very poor words for Melody, called her a stupid girl. Melody, not having a voice, couldn't even make a response to Alice's very bad attitude. We learned that Martha still doesn't like the ponies she never asked for, or the doll's house she never asked for either. Chris and Harrison prove equally stupid concerning not only little girls, but grown women, and they just can't figure out why Hannah and George don't get on. Maybe it's George? Maybe it's George? It's George. And again, there is no mention of his disrespect bordering on violence towards women. But speaking of George, are we getting a richly nuanced character, or one of the writers can't decide how to portray? When he's good as a character, he's amazing. I believe it was Thursday's episode when he said he wanted to take his family out of poverty, and that was his main motivation. And I believe it is, along with taking them out of being disrespected. I can't remember who he was talking to, but he said Clary would be 70 and it'd be nice for her to stop working. The tone-deaf response was Helen would miss Clary, which George rightly ignored. I'm not the only person who hates George for being an ass, but understands him because basically what George rankles at is the status quo. Things should be as they are, that his family should be disrespected and poor, and that Helen missing Clary is more important than an ageing woman not having to spend the rest of her life filling yogurt pots at Bridge Farm. Yours, Chris in Indiana.
Thank you for that email, Chris. I think probably with George, we are getting that richly nuanced character. I think that he will be the future, the Grundys, as I said just before. And as you say, he has said that his main motivation is taking his family out of poverty. Now, I'm going to be extremely cynical. I'm going to say that he would love to earn enough money to be able to do that. And he might think that that's what's motivating him. But I also think that if he did earn enough money to take his family out of poverty, he wouldn't necessarily actually do that. He would probably spend it on himself. Because in with all that rich nuance, at the bottom of it is a deeply selfish person who wants the results without putting in the hard yards. And I think that if he got the money, however he got it, he would believe that he had earned it himself, that he had deserved it, and therefore that he should spend it on himself. And the next bit of money would go towards his parents or his grandparents and so forth. So I'm a bit cynical about him. But what do you think, Jacqueline?
Yeah, I think I probably agree with you. And I don't actually think his parents will get to come in line. I think after him, it might be his grandparents and not Susan and Neil. It'll be Clary and Eddie, especially Eddie, as Eddie has been so flaming full to encourage him. Last week cheating, this week in the gossiping. Everybody knows how I feel about that.
But no, I think you're right. Any money he earns is for him, and he will see it as he has earned it, no matter how he gets it. And then everybody else will be way down the line. But what a nuanced character. Brilliant. Brilliantly written. Brilliantly played.
Yeah. That's all our emails.
Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very lovely, busy, friendly and thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you who are David Thompson, Helen Dyson, Judy Astley, Sue Braley, Woody Woodward, James Entwistle,
Anthea Hancock, Debbie Armand, Hilary Coombs, Matthew T, Jade Peace, Jackie Ann, and Emily Allen. So let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from Rob.
Hello, everyone. We know what's been going on in Ambridge, but what's been going on the Facebook page this week? Without doubt, this has been the week of the Rat Bank, a.k.a. George Grundy. Ray Milner summed it up with, "How much longer before the heavily signposted George Major incident erupts?" Here is his resentment against Jolene for barring him and for being a woman. His anger at Hannah for being his boss and for being a woman. His resentment against Fallon because she won't shag him and for being a woman. His resentment against Emma for whatever and for being, well, you get the point. His resentment to Susan for being so lame He is being pressured from all around to make up to Jolene and Hannah. Are they drawing to a point yet? Tonight we had a seeming mellowing, so it's Friday tomorrow, too soon. As it happened, it didn't even appear in it, Ray. But Genevieve Ann Holmes managed to shine a bit of light onto a very dark subject. George is a really well-written, complex character. I've no doubt he's a wrong'un, but there are definitely shades of grey rather than out-and-out evil. Meanwhile, other scions of the Grundy clan caused some confusion for Sarah Seeger. Have I missed a bit, or is there a big misalign between Emma, Ed and Will? Will's carrying on like he's a partner in the business. Emma and Ed think he has given them a business loan. Am I right? Indeed you are, Sarah. We're all waiting for that particular shoe to drop. Still, there is a member of the Grundys with some nous. Unfortunately, it's Bartleby, and he isn't being allowed to speak his own mind. Benjamin Kevin said, "So, what are people's predictions on the very bizarre Bartleby view from my paddock storyline?" Note that Harrison has given the Grundys, well, George, a get out of jail free card by saying, "It's only slander if it's not true." There was a fun clash between the two dominant women in Brian's life, Kate and Miranda, over a meal in the Bull, which Amanda Hutton summed up by, "Probably alone in this, but I was quite impressed with Miranda's handling of the exhausting, always right Kate. At last, someone found an effective way to shut her up. No, Amanda, you're not all alone." And Joanne Smith came up with a reminder for us. Any guesses on when Johnny might be back? Based on no research at all, I feel like we must be close to the date he was due back from his travels. I remember Tom grumbling a few months ago about how inconvenient it was and no one calling Tom out about how at least Johnny's being more responsible than Tom with his history of fleeing the country for months with no notice after he jilted Kirsty. And then, to wrap things up, the other featured player of the week was Alice. Trouble is, she was less than honest with everyone around her. Or, as Darcy Jorgensen put it, "Yo, Alice, that polygraph machine is going zing." Till the next time. Laters.
Thank you for that, Rob. Thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do, but don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know you're a real person. Now we're going to move on to Twitter, where you'll find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, Stephen can occasionally be found at Wenlock House. But we're both spending more time following the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at jberto.bsky.social.
And I am at wenlock.bsky.social.
So let's find out who's won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, Tiger.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here, with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Glynn, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on Twitter and Blue Sky, a few people pointed out that the actor who plays Adam received a BAFTA Games Award for Best Performer in a Supporting Role for his performance as Raphael in Baldur's Gate 3. Maybe that's why we haven't heard much from Adam recently. There was also much discussion of why Will seems to think he's a shareholder or investor in Ed and Emma's business, when in fact he offered them a loan. And I was very impressed by a piece of symmetry highlighted in a discussion with the erudite Brenda Selwyn, when MDO5.bsky.social highlighted that one Horribin child, Chelsea, and one Pargeter, Freddie, are now both at Lower Loxley, while the other Pargeter, Lily, and Horribin, Brad, are both at Grey Gables. But my favourite thread this week was started by friend of the show, Miranda, at Apple Android App, who asked for suggestions for Ed and Emma's business name. She offered Grundy Planks, Thickets and Choppers as an opener. Others I particularly enjoyed included Graham at GPL1969 offering Grundy, Grundy and Grundy, Tree Fellas. I think that's better with an Irish accent. Let Love Win at All This and Less, who apologised for the horrific gender stereotyping, but a chicken two short planks. At Annie Tracy 1 with See It, Say It, Saw It. At Black Widow 400 with Chop It, Leg It and Scarper. And finally, Les Archers at Leesley 2 with Grundy Power, Treason and Flop. Best for all of us who remember the 5th of November rhyme, I think. This one could run and run. But now to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's Wendy Pitt, at Wendy J. Pitt 61. How long before Eddie gets his lights punched out by somebody who doesn't see the funny side of his videos? You ask for all of us, Wendy. The silver medalist is Hugsy, at hugsy.bsky.social. George is real management material. Susan must be so proud. And on the same theme, the gold medal goes to Ian, at Kernow27. Is George the relief milker and failed vape mastermind business tycoon giving advice? Yes, I think it is. And on that managerial note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to everyone who was mentioned in this week's roundup. Don't forget also that we're on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, where Theo looks after things, but we're still on the lookout for somebody who might like to take over that role for us.
Next week, Jacqueline will not be available, so I will be recording with the wonderful Bernadette Hawkes. We will, however, be recording at the normal time of first thing Saturday morning, so please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time, as usual. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the team of Dumpty Dummers behind the scenes. And we need to say a great big thank you to all of you who are listening to us too. We love making this podcast and sharing our love of Archers around the world.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Orman for their voices and our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We're now off to re-experience playfulness, curiosity and uncomplicated joy. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's au revoir from me.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.